The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
What's the role of the University of Pennsylvania Biden Center in all of this? The Penn Biden Center is not some normal Ivy League think tank. It was, we now know that it's in Washington, D.C. It was a hangout, a clubhouse for President Biden and his people before they were inaugurated. And allegedly, it is funded with tens of millions of dollars from China. What's up with that?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
What's up with that? That's Senator John Kennedy from, I think it's Louisiana, right, Mac? Louisiana. You know, the guy always makes me laugh. If you ever hear his sound bites or you hear his comments, they're so salient. They're actually very funny and insightful. I actually really enjoy listening to his observations. Hey, good afternoon. It's good to be back with you. I'm Drew Mariani. Thanks for hanging out with me today. We got a lot to get into today, and I'm looking forward to it, from your rising egg costs and food costs to psilocybin and mushrooms and MDT and a whole bunch of DMT, I should say, a lot of other type of psychedelics that are now being used to treat depression and PTSD and a lot of other stuff. Is it safe or is it dangerous territory? We'll get into that. We'll pray the chaplet and much more. As always, I said to Maggie today, I said, look, you never know what we're going to talk about, right? Every day in this show, it is different. That's the one thing you can be assured of, that you'll get a look at life and the most important issues of the day, unlike anywhere else. And that's the beauty of what we do here. So it's good to be with you today. Let's start off today just with a quick update on the president. Ever since you learned about those classified documents being discovered, the organization where they were found, of course, it's been under tremendous scrutiny. The Penn Biden Center for Diplomatic and Global Engagement set up as a think tank in 2017 in Washington after then Vice President Joe Biden was done his term of office. And it's tied to a very reputable university, University of Pennsylvania. It was staffed mostly by a former Obama administration staffers. But what's not known is exactly how deep its ties are to China. Federal records show that the university received millions of dollars in donations from foreign businesses and governments between the years 2013 and 2019. And that was all led by China. So Chinese banks, you got corporations, you got other entities. They gave close to $70 million, 70 mil, between 2013 and mid-2019, including 40% recorded from anonymous donors. So who are they, right? Like at Biden's Wilmington House, there are no records who visited the center and who might have had access to the documents. You know, nothing's going to come of this. I got the special counsel. They're going to investigate. I mean, nothing's going to happen with Trump either. We'll see how it all plays out. But these are our nation's most sensitive secrets. When they have these top secret type of clearances and documents, they should be kept in a very safe place. The fact that they were in garages and beach houses and in think tanks, and there's no logs of who came, who went, who had access, and that should be very, very troubling. So we'll see. We'll see how the story plays out. It's a story that's not going to end this week. I'll continue to monitor it for you, but there'll be no jail time for Donald Trump or for Joe Biden. But we'll see. And they're probably not the only guys that have done this. Gas stoves, right? I feel like I've been talking to you a lot about gas stoves. If you're wondering where the call to ban those stoves came from, I just saw something else. I'll just pass along since we've been talking about this. It actually started from a group called Rocky Mountain Institute. And the Washington Free Beacon was reporting that in 2013, the Rocky Mountain Institute, guess who they joined forces with? China's National Development and Reform Commission. There's China again, right? The government agency tasked with planning the communist nation's economy to produce a report that advised China to replace existing appliances and generators with, clean energy technologies. When certain provinces didn't meet their goals, the Institute pushed them to make changes, and that resulted in dim traffic lights and undercooked rice because of lack of electricity. Here's a little bit of an interview that was done with Rick Perry. And in it, they explore this whole gas stove issue. Check this out.
Rick Perry, former energy secretary, Texas governor, AFPI energy expert, the great Rick Perry. About 40% of our stoves in America are gas burning. This is an attack on natural gas and an attack on fossil fuels, as you know. You got this Rocky Mountain Institute, which has no experts and has big ties and funding from China, a great gas burning country, China. And they're all talking about this. And I see this as just another way of attacking fossil fuels and ending fossil fuels. And how do you see it?
If it wasn't serious, Larry, it would be hilarious. But it is serious. These people want to control your life. That's what this is really about. The environment happens to be the happy place that they can go and pray at the altar, the environmental woke crowd, if you will. But this is about controlling your life. They want to control every aspect of your life. And fossil fuels is a relatively easy one for them to go after because the general public doesn't really understand the nexus, if you will, between practically everything that we use that fossil fuels, particularly natural gas, is at the basis of. If you are against fossil fuels, if you're one of these people that stand up and say, you got to quit burning that natural gas in your stove, you're killing the climate. You're basically saying to third world countries in particular, the billions of people who do not have access to this type of power, this fuel, sorry, you're just going to die. You're not going to have access to electricity. You're not going to have access to natural gas. You're going to have to keep burning wood or cow dung, and you're just going to die an early, painful death. Sorry. What a cold-hearted position that is. And I think one that's, quite frankly, not going to stand the test of time.
That's, again, former Energy Secretary Rick Perry saying that. That's a pretty bold statement on his behalf. We'll see what's next. We'll see what's in the crosshairs of this war of fossil fuels. And, again, I want to be clear. I'm all about making sure that we have we're good stewards of the environment. God created it. He entrusted it to us. We have to be good stewards of it. But some of this radical ideology at the at really the pain of our fellow human beings is wrong. And I think the transition has got to be slow, and we have to really look at the big picture and take into consideration everything from solar activity to historical weather pattern cycles to the imprint that man is having on it. So I have real issues with the amount of plastic that's dumped in our ocean and the abuses that we have here in the planet. We've got to be good stewards. But again, I think you need balance in all things. And so often we see these radical, radical extremes. And, you know, we live in a time, too. You know, Rick Perry was talking about control, right? I don't know if you heard the latest installment on the Twitter files. When it comes to your vaccine, a lot of people didn't like the control the government wanted there. It was showing that the BioNTech, which developed Pfizer's vaccine against COVID, that they were also pressuring Twitter to censor accounts that were pushing companies to share the intellectual property and patents associated with the vaccine so low-cost generic versions could be made. There's the lobbying group for Pfizer and Moderna. Bio also provided, I think it was something like $1.3 million to establish a campaign called Stronger that helped Twitter create content moderation bots and select which public health account got verification. It's not clear from the files, though, how much Twitter went along with the demands. But we know the FBI, we know how the government has been involved with social media and what they wanted censored and what they didn't. And this is a problem. Really makes you think twice about what you're seeing and what is coming up before you. The Holy Father, Pope Francis, I hope you're praying for him. I saw the report just on something else that, you know, and I don't pray for the Holy Father enough. I pray for our country. I pray for our leaders. Our Lady, in a very famous apparition back in 1973, she appeared to a nun in a statue there, wept 101 times. She gave her a very apocalyptic future, vision of the future. The place was called Akita, Japan. And I went and I interviewed this nun years after this particular vision when she was still a young nun. She's like now in her 80s, late 80s. Her name was Sister Agnes Hasegawa. And part of the message was this call to pray for our priests, our bishops, and our cardinals, because the Virgin said that the cup was filling up, the cup of chastisement for the world. and it was about to overflow. She's talked about the true presence of Christ in the Eucharist. She talked about a great fire that would fall from the sky, a great chastisement that would befall the human race if it did not amend its ways and return back to God. She said it'd be worse than the deluge, worse than the great flood of Noah, and that those who survived would envy the dead. And I often wonder if that was mitigated, both due to prayer, especially the rosary and the fall of the Iron Curtain, because as Sister Lucia said, that the world averted a nuclear war. She said in 1985 that would have happened. But the consecration, I think, of to Our Lady's Immaculate Heart averted that. And still we live in a time where there are nations that would have the capability of destroying the world. You know? And we need to pray for their conversion, but I also need to pray for this Pope. You know, we need to pray for our spiritual leaders. You need to pray for your priests and for your bishops and for your cardinals. That's a message that's still relevant today, the one in Nikita. You know, both about the true presence, both about our priests, our bishops, our cardinals, both about the real threat for the future of the world. Pope Francis has a way of starting the rumor mill, or at least the speculation mill. On Sunday, he preached about St. John the Baptist, and he said something that I found very striking. And again, I just always try to see what's happening behind the scenes, down the road, around the bend, behind the veil. He said this. He says, quote, "It's good for us to cultivate, like John, the virtue of setting ourselves aside at the right moment. Bearing witness to the point of reference of life is Jesus. To step aside, to learn to take one's leave. I have completed this mission. I have had this meeting. I will step aside and leave room for the Lord. To learn to step aside, not to take something for ourselves in recompense." Now, that set into motion a lot of speculation. What's he saying? Is he talking to you and me? Oh, yeah, absolutely. But is he also maybe talking about himself? Is he saying that it is, you know, that we all have to learn to step aside, right? That he says, I've completed this mission. I will now leave room to the Lord. I think the message can be interpreted in two ways. I don't know what the Holy Father's future plans are, but please pray for him. Pray for his good health. I'd hate to see another resignation, to be honest with you, just for the church and the conclave and everything that goes with it. But George Weigel, who's the papal biographer for John Paul II, he said something to me last week. He was on the show, and I was talking to him, I think, off air. I don't think he said this on air. I asked about Pope Francis, and I said, are you worried that, you know, we might see another resignation now that Benedict is gone and he might follow in that footstep? He says, I think his papacy probably won't be long. He says, he's not a well man, is what he said to me. And I don't know what that means. I mean, it could be just simply George Weigel's interpretation, but it can certainly be, it can certainly mean something else. You know, I don't know. But Benedict did say his pontificate would be a short one. When he first came. It's been 10 years. It's been a decade now. So I don't know. Pray for him. That's all I'm saying. Hey, one final story here, and then I want to talk about the rising cost of food and eggs. I went shopping with my wife before the Christmas holidays. I could not believe how much eggs cost. I was stunned because I don't do the shopping. She does, you know, and I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Eggs cost that much, right? We'll talk about it. Jim Ennis is going to be stopping by in a minute. We'll get to him. But there was a recent Gallup poll measuring how the general public perceives the honesty and the integrity of various professions. And I thought I'd share this with you. Guess what? You know, I don't know if you know what the top ranking ones are, but they found that priests were ranked number 7 on the list. Nurses, guess what? You led the way. 79% of the respondents said that you have high morals. And I would think the priest had the highest morals, right? I know the media wants you to think they don't. But somebody who commits themselves to God, takes vows of celibacy, perhaps obedience and, you know, chastity and poverty or whatever vow a particular order or priest might take, I think that's pretty high morals, right? But they're number 7 on the list. Nurses, of course, gosh, God bless you, nurses. Love you. 79% of you saying you had high morals, followed by doctors at 62%. I'm not here to bash doctors. I got a lot of friends who are doctors, right? I can't tell you how many doctors I know that aren't so moral. You know what I mean? Those who work in a hospital might be able to share the same thing. Not everybody. I don't broad brush. But that's number 2. Pharmacists were at 58%. High school teachers, 53%. Police officers at 50%. judges at 39. You think judges should be at the top of the list too? I would hope doctors and nurses and judges, priests, you'd all be up there. It'd be a battle. Clergy came in at 34%, right? Half of what people view nurses as. So I'll share one final aspect of that. I just find it funny. Guess where members of Congress came in at, what their percentage was. Maggie said 12%. 8%, Maggie. You're close. You're close. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, we'll see. So I don't know. I guess it gives everybody's vocation a little bit more room to show integrity, right? There you go. Look, let's talk egg shortages. I'd love to hear your experiences too. One of my producers buys his eggs from a farmer. He gets them for like nothing. They're range fed, natural, and he's all into being supernatural. I have to go to a store to get mine. You know, I guess you can buy organic there, but I'll tell you what, the cost of food has gone up. It's gone up. I guess I saw a meme the other day on social media mocking the shortage and the high prices of eggs. There was a guy getting down on one knee. He's proposing to the girl, and he's holding a box with an egg. And the tagline on the box says, he decided to get her something really expensive. Bottle boom. Yeah, no kidding, right? Eggs are on the rise, so you get the point, right? The question is why. Why are eggs, which are so abundant, people used to get them for 99 cents a dozen, why are they now $5, $6, $7, right? It's crazy. It's crazy. What you're going to hear, people are going to say, oh, it's the avian flu. Oh, it's a supply chain. Oh, it's the farmers. Oh, you know, it's... the flu is rampant throughout the flock. If you get avian flu in a flock, you got to kill the entire flock. I hear turkeys on the rise too. You know, there's a shortage of turkeys out there too. But it's reported that the Department of Agriculture, that 44 million birds have been slaughtered because of this avian flu. But here to fill us in on all the details is Jim Ennis. He's the executive director of Catholic Rural Life. You can find him at CatholicRuralLife.org. And we'll get some perspective on what we are now seeing and maybe what you could expect for food prices in the days ahead. Jim, thank you for being here again. It's good to talk with you.
Thank you, Drew. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
So I know you personally are in touch with farmers on a daily basis. What are you hearing from these guys? And what are they saying about the cost of eggs and so many other things?
Well, you know, we work with farmers all over the country, and we have members in 45 states. But, you know, the avian flu, as you mentioned earlier in your remarks, there's been an unprecedented outbreak over in 2022, and that has just decimated flocks throughout the country. And, you know, that has had a severe impact on the supply of eggs. And so that's why you're seeing prices go up substantially, and, you know, especially in December, you know, when there's a lot of baking going on and around the holidays.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I went shopping with my wife, and when I saw the eggs were like $7 or some ridiculous amount of money, I was totally shocked. But I figured, yeah, there's a higher demand come Christmas. Everyone's baking and getting ready. But avian flu is a real killer. How does this avian flu get spread, and why do you have to destroy the entire flock?
Well, it's extremely contagious, and it's spread. I mean, the birds, obviously, this is both happening in Europe and in North America. And so it's passed on from bird to bird. It's in both in flocks of birds that are on farms, but also wild birds. And so often wild birds are the ones that spread it. You know, as they go by, as their droppings, et cetera, they can pass on the disease, and it can quickly impact birds all over the country.
Yeah, I also heard that, you know, let's say a farmer steps on, you know, some waste that had it and went to another farmer. You can spread it just by, you know, the heel of your boot, right? So, I mean, it can get transferred in all sorts of ways. So,
yeah, and this particular strain is highly contagious, and so it's really devastated flocks, both commercial flocks and you know, a lot of folks, including myself. I have a backyard flock in my backyard. I raise chickens.
I know, and more and more people are doing that. Should people be doing that? I mean, there are people who go to small farms to buy eggs, like my producer, you know. You know, we got these huge farm operations. That's where we are today. But Are more people now beginning to raise chickens? It might just be some of the people that I've encountered. What do you think about that? Is it hard?
You know, it's not that difficult. It is a chore, though. You know, so you do have to take care of the birds, and you know, a lot of folks who do this want to at least be in touch with how their food is grown. Yeah. And this is one small way. It's like having a garden. You know, you got to care for the garden. You got to care for the chickens and feed them and water them pretty regularly. And you can have eggs for, you know, 3 to 4, maybe 5 years of production. But again, and so that has become popular. Cities, different cities have different regulations around the country. Yeah. But we also see a lot of families moving out to the countryside and, you know, raising chickens as well in smaller flocks.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of factors. You had the avian flu, you know, the war in Ukraine and Russia. There's a major exporter of fertilizer. And my understanding is that fertilizer costs went through the roof. I think they're improving now, but they're still pretty high. Energy costs have been up. Labor costs, you can't get people to work. We've had transportation issues, right? Supply chain. Weather has been bizarre in this country. I mean, I think all those things, almost like a perfect storm, isn't it? Coming in.
It is.
Because it's not just eggs. I was seeing a report that butter and margarine are up 35%. Lettuce is up 25%. Flour and these prepared flour mixes, 23%. Bread is up almost 16%. Cereal and products like that up 15%. So, you know, this is spread out all across the board, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I think on average across all food products, prices are up about 12%. But for eggs, you know, it's substantially more. I mean, eggs have tripled in prices.
That's crazy.
And so it really is a substantial change. And, you know, people are starting to feel it. You know, like you said, as you go to the grocery store, you start seeing the differences. Yeah. And across, but the impact of the war in Ukraine did have an impact on food prices, going back to fertilizers and other inputs. And the cost of gas and fuel was going up earlier in 2022. So that has had an impact, and inflation has been, you know, relatively high. So all that has an impact on our food prices.
So that's here in the States. I just saw a headline. Maggie and I were just talking about it. The World Food Program chief is warning of a growing global crisis right now. Where are we globally? And in a time where our technology is so advanced, I can't imagine us not being able to conquer, you know, a world food shortage. But give me your take on that.
Well, I mean, this is a very complex question, but the short answer is that that perfect storm you mentioned earlier, you know, inflation, shortage of fertilizers, that bumps up the cost of inputs. All that has an impact on food prices. And food prices, when they start inflating, that can impact especially countries that can't afford to import food. And so you've got a lot of countries that are dependent upon imports as well. And so they're not food secure. And so that can have a huge impact on those, you know, less fortunate to be able to afford food. So yes, there's going to be definitely a food crisis. If this continues in, you know, both with eggs, but also across the board in terms of other types of food products.
Let's do this. Let's grab a call or two. I have a moment or two left for you. My guest today is Jim Ennis. If you want to get in, the number here for you is 888-914-9149. Pull up a chair. Anita is in Bloomington, Minnesota. Hi, Anita. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. See, I was curious who was in charge of the testing for the birds and the avian flu, and how is that testing performed? I had heard read back last year, a long time ago, maybe last summer, that it was the PCR test.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you said that. I just was having a conversation with somebody. Jim, you know this better than I do. This is your area. But somebody says that same test that they use to test these birds is the same one we were using to test for like COVID, some sort of PCR test. What do you know about that?
Boy, you know, I can't, I'm not going to speak beyond my expertise. And so, you know, the CDC tracks, you know, any type of kind of when human beings are exposed to bird flu, but the U.S. Department of Agriculture is one responsible for the bird flu in birds, And so they have state inspectors, and they inspect flocks, and they make those decisions about, you know, if that is indeed the flu is spreading, that they'll kill the whole flock. And so that's usually the state departments of agriculture making those decisions.
Anita, thanks. I think it was my producer, Tom, who was having that conversation with me last week. I said, really? The same? They use PCR? So interesting. I'll have to look into it. Joe in Wisconsin, you're on the air with Jim Ennis. Good afternoon.
Hi. It sounds like you've covered thousands of chickens that died of a disease. They were plowed under for fertilizer. Another thing is that this is the low time of the year for egg production because of the shorter daylight hours and the feed is getting a little bit old and things like that.
Right.
People try to help the birds by keeping a light on late in the evening. That helps a little bit, but this is the low point in the year for egg production.
Good to know. Hey, Joe, thanks. I didn't know that. Makes sense, doesn't it, Jim? Jim, final thoughts for you. I only have a moment left.
It's the natural cycle, but they also get egg. You know, eggs are imported from other parts of the country. You know, when regionally we have shorter days and so forth. So he's absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you. It is good to be here with you. As always, we'll continue to monitor this. And if you want to check out Jim Ennis, check out CatholicRuralLife.org. He's the executive director of that great organization. Look forward to our next conversation, Jim. Have a
thank
great
you,
one,
Drew.
Okay? All right. God
always
bless you.
Appreciate it.
You got it. It's bottom of the hour. I need to take a short pause. When I come back, we'll talk more. Monsignor James Shea is going to be coming back. We talked about nurses' strikes. I'm going to fill you in on that, get you plugged into a wonderful pilgrimage to Italy and so much more. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The strike comes during a historic staffing shortage nationwide of nearly 250,000 registered nurses. In places like Florida, they need 24,000 RNs. In New York, about 13,000. And in California, that number jumps to 65,000.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember that or not. Boy, a lot of strikes recently. And just got done talking about nurses, right? God bless. And chickens, Maggie's saying. Yeah, we talk chickens, but we opened talking about nurses in the very beginning of our conversation today. I shared a story about how Gallup did a poll, right? They looked at the general public and how they perceive both honesty and integrity of various professions. Nurses were at the top of the list. Where are nuns? They didn't even make the list. Priests are number seven, but nurses were number one on the list. And I'll tell you what, God bless these nurses. I'm a big dude, right? And if I was in the hospital, I don't know how these women could go ahead and move some men who are over 6 foot, right? Or who weigh over 230 pounds. It's just, God bless them and the care they take of them. And God bless those male nurses that are in there, you know, who just do such wonderful work. It's a vocation. It's a call to really be instruments of God's mercy. And I think it's such a wonderful way to show mercy to others. If you're discerning a vocation, I would encourage you maybe to consider becoming a nurse. There's a nurse shortage. Last week, nurses in New York City, I should say, they reached a tentative deal with four hospitals to end a strike. And they want a very substantial pay increase, and they deserve it. But more importantly, they want agreements for what they call safe staffing ratios. That's the number of patients that a nurse is assigned to. And the other hospitals in the city, they recently made similar agreements, narrowly averting a massive strike. But in the upper Midwest, in the Twin Cities, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, nurses there, as well as Duluth, Minnesota, and Superior, and in the town of Two Harbors, they went on strike twice last year, once in August and then once in December. That second strike came as places like Children's Hospital in Minneapolis were inundated with patients because of COVID, and now we've got RSV and seasonal flu. And the nurses again say, look, there's just not enough nurses being assigned. No, the amount of work we have is off the charts, and families have to wait hours to have their children seen, and as a parent, you know how stressful that can be. God bless the nurses and doctors during the pandemic, during COVID. I mean, how overrun and overwhelmed were they? This is a noble and honorable vocation. I would really encourage you to think about it. It's not just New York. It's not just Minnesota either. We see this kind of problem all over the place. I saw an article just recently. I think it was in the Business Insider. They were reporting that nurses are getting burned out. And maybe you're a nurse. Maybe you're going through this right now. They're leaving the profession because of the not just the pressure, but the demand on them. One nurse that I was reading about, she described, and I don't want to be disparaging. She described a chaotic situation where the sickest patients are getting attention, while those, for instance, that just might need a bath or to be fed, they're overlooked because there just aren't enough nurses to go around. And another nurse described hospitals demanding overtime. There are not enough people to cover the shifts. Full-time nurses work usually. That means maybe a 12-hour shift. That's a long day, right? 12-hour shifts a week. Overtime, that can mean working 12-hour shifts, a couple of them in a row. That leads to burnout. That leads to burnout. I'm joined right now by Monsignor James Shea. He is the president of the University of Mary. And I wanted to readdress this issue just because I understand how critical it is for this country, how critical it is for hospitals, how critical it is in general for what might loom in the not too distant future. And his organization is doing something that's just, I think, off the charts. When you hear about what he's offering, please tell your daughters, your sons, tell your nieces, your nephews, your grandkids. This is something I think that could really change the trajectory of their life. Monsignor, good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Hey, great to be with you, Drew. Thanks so much.
I thought of you as I was seeing these news reports, Business Insider, the strike that took place last week. And I remembered a conversation we had. I thought, look, we've got to talk about what you're seeing, how you're responding to it, and why this really is perhaps a solution. Medicine's changed a lot, just even over the last couple years because of COVID. A lot of challenges to staff, in particular the nurses. Maybe you can expand a little bit on what you're seeing and how the University of Mary is responding.
Yeah, what I would say first of all is some of the commentary that you were offering just now, Drew, is really important for us to consider. When we think about the profession of nursing and the nobility of nursing as a profession, it's important for us to take a half a step back. You talked about nuns and nurses.
Right.
there was a time in the history of our country when a large number of women religious, in fact, were nurses, and they built the largest private hospital system that the world had ever seen here in the United States of America. And so when you look at the legacy of Catholic healthcare from to shining sea in the United States, you know that we as Catholics have been involved on the front lines in a disproportionate way relative to the rest of the population. Catholics have been champions of healthcare from the very beginning. And then places like us, places like the University of Mary, also founded by women religious, very often were founded with the need to staff Catholic hospitals and Catholic schools. That's how it was at the University of Mary. We were founded in 1959 as Mary College, and our first two majors were nursing and education. And so we were training nurses and we were training teachers. And I was talking to somebody probably 2 weeks ago, Drew, who was talking about her experience at sort of a two-year nursing college in a large American city. And it wasn't even a Catholic nursing college. It was a two-year nursing college, and the majority of people in her class were Catholics. There was just something in the DNA of the Catholic population, the immigrant Catholic population in this country, where we really were part of the whole healthcare infrastructure. And nurses today are as important as they've ever been. When you and I talked before, we talked about this looming and very alarming shortage as the baby boomers age and as they're needing more and more health care and as our nation needs more and more health care across various demographics. We are seeing a precipitous decline of people entering the profession of nursing, and we're seeing a lot of burnout and a lot of people exiting the profession of nursing just at a time when we need more nurses, not less. And so there is a crisis which is looming in healthcare in this country as a result of the nursing shortage and as a result of nursing burnout, just those things which you're talking about. And so the University of Mary is deeply, deeply concerned about this.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing, too, because I think your campaign is off the charts. But before I do, I want to ask you an ethical question. You know, and I saw these protests a couple of weeks ago, the strikes, is really the right word for it. And as I mentioned, Minneapolis is one of those areas that took place. We saw it in New York City. What are the ethics of nurses striking in those particular situations? You know, there are people who may have to cancel certain elective procedures. There might be people who've got to wait longer. What's your thought on some of these strikes? I understand fair pay or better hours, and that's an effective way of getting it. But do you have any concerns at all about seeing nurses strike?
Yeah, well, I think that it is a circumstantial thing to which the virtue of prudence has to be carefully applied. Because as we know from Catholic social teaching, Rerum Novarum, and all of the documents of the Church's magisterium that follow from it, the dignity of work and the rights of workers is a fundamental right. And so you're right to say that to ask for fair pay and good working conditions is within the ethical rights of workers, and that includes nurses. Mm-hmm. At the same time, and this is the delicate matter, nurses of course do provide for sometimes emergency health care services, mm-hmm. and those need to be provided to people. You know, I see that in addition to these particular concerns, in addition to concerns about fair pay and concerns about good working conditions, one of the concerns that we're addressing at the University of Mary has to do with medical conscience rights as well. In other words, not only do nurses have the right to be fairly compensated and to have good working conditions, they also have the right not to be asked to participate in procedures which would violate their consciences. And that's an increasing area of concern, which is one of the reasons why, rather than retreating from nursing education, we're trying to ramp it up here and train more and more nurses and equip them not just what they need to pass their NCLEX exam, which is the certification exam to enter the profession of nursing with a BSN degree, with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, but also that we're trying to equip them with the moral and the ethical wherewithal so that they can know how to stand up for themselves if they're asked to participate in a gender transition surgery or an elective abortion or something like that.
So, Monsignor, fill everyone in on what you're offering, because last time you were on, I just want to put this on the radar as I see the demand for nurses and how hard they're working. And there's clearly it's a vocational opportunity for anybody who I think wants to go down this path. What you're offering to me, I've never heard before. And I just want to present it to those who are listening, because I think this may be an answer to some prayers. Fill everyone in on everything from the pilgrimage to the free education.
Yeah, so we're offering we're launching this fall at the University of Mary here in Bismarck, North Dakota. We're launching a tuition-free nursing academy. A tuition-free nursing academy. So as I said before, we've had nursing at Mary since 1959. And two of the last 3 years, I know you know this already, Drew, but two of the last 3 years, we were ranked the number one nursing program of any college or university in the United States. In other words, out of there something like 2,200 nursing programs, our nursing program, two of the last 3 years, has come out as number one. And that's based upon the pass rates of students who go through our nursing program on that NCLEX exam. In other words, we have a tremendously high-quality nursing program, and we offer bachelor's degrees in nursing, master's degrees in nursing, and we have a doctorate in nursing practice as well. And so we're really an impressive nursing school already. But within our legacy program of nursing this fall, we're going to start an elite nursing academy where we're offering nursing education tuition-free on a year-round campus model. What that means is that for qualified applicants, and we're accepting applications for this tuition-free nursing academy right now, qualified applicants who are accepted into this nursing academy will receive their nursing education tuition-free.
it'll finish in 2.6 years because we'll go through fall semester, spring semester, and summer semester when we can do a lot of clinicals. Now, it's not an accelerated program. In other words, they're taking a regular course load, but they're doing it with a summer semester, meaning that in less than 3 years, they'll have their degree. And within the midst of it, we're taking them to Europe, all expenses paid, on a pilgrimage where we'll start at the University of Mary's campus in Rome. We'll go up to the hometown of St. Gianna Beretta Mola, who is the namesake of our School of Health Sciences. We'll take them to the concentration camp of Dachau near Munich in Germany, which is where the Nazis did the medical experimentations and formulated the final solution. We'll go to Nuremberg, which is where the war trials happen at the end of the war. And Nuremberg and Dachau are meant to introduce the students to the culture of death and show them this is what happens when medical science turns away from its primary end, the care of the life and dignity of the human person, and instead becomes an instrument of death. And then at the end, of course, we'll take them to Lourdes in southern France, where they'll work in the hospitals there for a little bit. They'll meet the sick at the train station. They'll take them to the baths. They'll take them to the Eucharistic processions and to the candlelight processions at nighttime. And there we'll be able to show them. Of course, they'll meet with the head of the medical bureau, which talks about the miracles, the medical miracles that happen in Lourdes. And we want to bring their minds and their hearts alive to what happens when medicine truly serves the dignity of the human person. And then they'll have very amazing opportunities for employment immediately following that. And so it's a really amazing and really impressive program. We're tremendously excited about it.
So what is the best way to connect? How does one sign up or connect?
Oh, yeah. So one can go to umary.edu. And right now on the top of our website, we've got a banner that clicks you right through. Or if you want to go directly to the website with more information about this tuition-free nursing academy, it's umary.edu/nursing academy. That'll take you right to it. And we do hope that we get highly qualified, but also deeply mission-driven applicants for this, because what we're hoping to do is to train in the Catholic tradition, to train some of the very best nurses of this rising generation, not just in terms of technical competence, because we know that we can do that, but in terms of moral imagination and formation and bioethical competence as well. We want them to understand the church's teaching about the life and dignity of the human person and how important that is. One of the ways that you can avoid burnout in your life is to give your life over to a higher cause. And one of the reasons that we get burnout is that we set our sights too low, not that we set them too high. And so we want to instill in all of our students a sense for the nobility and the beauty of the vocation of nursing and the way that it's not meant simply to take, but to give life.
Well, Monsignor, thank you for what you do. And I think it's an incredible program. I hope people will take advantage of it and keep up your good work. All right. I'm going to be praying the chaplet coming up here in about 10 minutes. We'll pray for your continued success. And please remember us in your prayers as well. Okay.
Oh, I sure will. I always will. God bless you, Drew.
God bless you. This is University of Mary President Monsignor James Shea. Check out the program. It's on their website. Of course, you can always check out, come to mary.edu. You can do a quick search. If you're in your car, check it out. Let's take a very short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. Feel free to dial in. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Chapel of Divine Mercy is about, 10 minutes away. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. We are about 8 minutes away from the chaplet. Of course, if you are new to it and you've never been able to get through, let me give you a telephone number. It's 888-914-9149. I'll try to take as many calls as I can in Well, in the chaplet. But I know the phone lines fill up quickly, so you can also get your prayer intention in now on our Twitter page. Maggie will be monitoring that. She'll bring them to the prayer team here in a couple minutes. You can do that at Drew Mariani Show. At Drew Mariani Show, and we'll pray. Pray for whatever you need, your health, your finances, your relationships, whatever struggle you're going through right now, we will make sure that we pray for you, okay? I want to remind you something that Relevant Radio is doing too. I haven't mentioned it yet, and I think it's really important. You know, I know you're a believer in prayer. I certainly am. And I say it a lot. I often say that if you really want to amplify the power of your prayer, then you couple it with fasting, right? It's kind of a spiritual secret. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? They go, Al's denying myself something going to amplify it. You take a look at the lives of the saints. They all understood the secret. Christ himself fasted for how many days, right? 40 before he hung on a cross for us, before he conquered death, before he achieved the pinnacle of what God the Father sent him to. The saints, the Virgin Mary, they all understood this. Great exorcists, before they go in any exorcism, they not only have to have a very in-depth confession to cleanse themselves of any attachment, any sin, but they fast. Christ said that certain souls can only be cast out through what? Through prayer and fasting. Well, again, this year, Relevant Radio is going to be asking the audience to join them in praying and fasting for life in solidarity with those who will be marching in Washington, D.C. on the 20th. Can you believe that? That's this weekend already. It's this Friday. That is this Friday. So once per hour, you know, we are going to be inviting you I'm going to try to remind you every hour to join us. Put this in your smartphone, tell your family, jot it down on a piece of paper. It's going to be a big year. You know, Roe fell, and we should celebrate that. But we should also continue to pray for where the battle is now gone. It's gone to the state level. And there's some really ugly, very dark legislation that is being passed in this country. And the war's not over, right? One of the battles, a big battle's been won, but the war continues. So 2022 is a big year for the pro-life cause. It's just the beginning. So deeply rooted in all this, and this is my final thought on it, is a dark spirit. I mean, this is the high holy sacrament for the evil one. He loves abortion. He has a bloodlust for it. He knows the devastation and destruction that it will cause, not only to the woman, to the child in the womb, but what it does to society at large. He hates life. He hates family. And by fasting, you're going to make a huge difference. So one of the things Relevant is asking you to do is to use the hashtag #FastForLife and be active. Let us know what you're doing, if you're going to fast, if you're going to pray, what you're going to do. I saw a couple of the responses that came in already here to Relevant Radio, and some people are saying, I'm going to spend an hour in adoration. I'm going to skip meat for a day. You know, I'm going to do something extra for someone. These are some of the ideas that have come in. Susan in Morton, Pennsylvania, I just want to send a shout out to you. Apparently, she's going to fast from eating ice cream for 1 month. Woo! I love ice cream. That's a tough one. She said, I'm also going to pray for the grace to give up the grumbling and complaining. Yeah, that often follows, right? Don't fast and don't sacrifice and be mean to everybody around you, okay? Don't be grumpy. Don't let the blood sugar drop so that you are a thorn in somebody else's side, right? We got to do this in a spirit of love and in charity. So anyway, check it out. Relevant Radio, again, asking you to join us in what I think is just an extraordinary campaign. Hey, I just want to put this on your radar, too, because I only have a moment or two left. I'm going on a pilgrimage. I don't know if you caught that word yesterday or not. Very grateful for Relevant Radio to spearhead another trip. We were in Israel. That was an incredible trip. Lots of prayer. Just a really extraordinary time. We're going to go ahead and we're going to go to Italy, and I'll tell you about all the details. Let me go to Daryl. He's in Fall River, Massachusetts. Daryl, good afternoon. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing fantastic, Drew. How are you?
Wow, you are a voice from the past. I know exactly what Daryl this is. Daryl and I, years ago, probably in the late 80s, Daryl, we were in Medjugorje together.
We were 1989, and we were there during Lent. And it's very timely that you and I are talking about that, because one of your speakers today was talking about how to reach youth. And as you know, because you're very, very close to the apparitions at Medjugorje, that Mary herself said that youth must be missing the point because they are not fasting enough.
Oh, yes.
They're not praying enough and praying from the heart. And I can share something with you about you and I being in Medjugorje. Before you and I left Medjugorje, you and I were together. We were walking in cornfields, saying prayers at all hours of the night at the moon, and I could go on and on and on. But I had one of the most humbling experiences of my life when the very final hour we were in Medjugorje, that we were treated to see the top video in the United States, and it was produced by Drew Mariani.
Oh, yes.
And I was stunned. I was shocked. It was transforming your heart.
Yeah, wow.
And all this time, I didn't know you, didn't know nothing about your background. Yeah. And there was the top-rated video in all of the United States that we were treated to there in Medjugorje. And there in that video, just as you are today, you were talking about people praying and fasting. So I'll let you have the mic because this is your field.
Well, Daryl, first of all, it's good to hear your voice. I remember those days fondly, and thank you for sharing that. Your wife Loretta, we're about to pray the chaplet. How is she doing? I know I missed your call. How's everybody in the family?
Thank you for calling. I was busy developing a national website that on another call. I'm going to be offering it free to nuns around the United States,
oh, wow.
You know, for those that are finding a need for more income to opening up small businesses.
Cool.
But that's a separate issue. She's doing well. Thank you for inquiring, and I'll pass the message on to her.
Well, we're going to pray right now, Daryl. Good to hear your voice. It's been a long time. That's Daryl Gagnon. He's from Fall River, Mass, re-echoing that need to pray and to fast. I want to pray for his wife and for him, and let's pray for each other when I return.